Good morning, or good night, or welcome midday, or however you would like to say adieu. Welcome to my show. This is the Gingerbread Man, and welcome to my home. This is a self episode, which I'm not really good at talking to myself, so this might not even go anywhere. Or I might post it eventually, but I'm just gonna go over some thoughts. Sorry, I'm gonna take this off real quick. It's probably gonna be kind of loud. Urgle dirgle. All right. Well, I've had an interesting week. For anybody who doesn't know me, I work at a daycare. I'm a cook. I really enjoy my job. It's really easy. I cook really bland food for like 100 kids. Even during COVID, it's really safe. Everybody's well taken care of, and I really respect my position, and I'm very grateful for being there. There's a little girl named Charlotte that I like to pick on these kids where I will God, I'm awful at talking to myself. If I was in a conversation with somebody, this wouldn't even be hard. It's hard for me to pretend that I'm talking to somebody. Anyways, I like to pick on certain kids, the ones that seem like they're struggling, and I like to go and try. I just feel compelled, like if there's a kid who comes in and cries often, like I got sick of just watching it, and I'm in a unique position where I can step out of wherever I am and go help if I can. And this little girl, she's had a real rough time for a real long time. Like, she just cries often. It doesn't seem like, I can't make any judgment calls on anything, but it doesn't look like her mom's really even giving a shit when her daughter walks up crying. I guess, and it happens all the time, and I've been in that position too, and that sucks because, you relate somehow. But it doesn't feel good, and I'm trying to learn how to be better through it. So I just walked her to class one day, and she immediately really liked me. And it just, the class she's in is pretty stern, and if you got 20 kids in a room, there's only so much that you can do to actually physically try to pay attention to people, because they're just little people, and it's sad. It's not the ideal place for your kids to be, and it's just somewhere that you have to because of how our society is. And especially for somebody like myself, I'm a single father, and I feel a lot less guilty with my son in kindergarten now, but he spent all of his toddler years and all of his formative years sitting in those places. And, he got kicked out of three of them. He's had a real rough time. He still has a rough time. And I think that's mainly because in an ideal world, he would have been with me the whole time. Whenever what I was doing, he'd be with me, seeing how to work, seeing how to do my job, or how to subsist or be able to survive for himself. Instead, he's in these institutions like all these other kids. And that's what I think is at the heart of Charlotte's problem, unfortunately. And I hate to say it, but I believe it. And I felt like I could help her by just showing her compassion and attention. And I did that. And at first, everybody was like, oh, yeah. And I felt good about it. And I had a little ego trip about it. And then I had to learn a hard lesson, which was that I had overstepped and I wasn't in the best position to be in. And the ladies running that classroom were not very happy with me because she started having a similar crying fit when I would leave that to her mother. And they tried to say that she was manipulating. And I still disagree that that's even possible for a child that young, even my son's age, to manipulate in the truest sense of what that word means. What does manipulate mean? To me, manipulate means to almost control the situation. And in order to control the situation, you have to have enough efficacy and ability. And I don't think children have that to be able to think through a situation and to change it in their minds and to model a situation and to be able to look at that model and then be able to tweak it and then know how to act in real life. That's complex adult behavior. And that comes through a lot of learning that a 3 or a 4 year old is not going to have. And I doubt even a 6 or 7 year old could truly manipulate, you know, if they're in a need, if they need something, then they're going to do actions to get what they need. And if they need compassion and attention in their lives, that's what they need. And unfortunately, you can't get that in certain settings. And I couldn't commit to it fully enough to a situation where I could do it gracefully, where I wasn't impeding her, because I couldn't actually. If I was in her classroom, if I was her teacher, maybe I could focus. But I'm not willing to do that, at least yet. I'm not sure if I would ever want to be a teacher or a daycare person. That's a teacher too, in a way. You know, it's a lot harder with toddlers and younger kids because they're a lot less mindless, which is what I was just arguing. But I'm not willing to do it yet. I feel that if I put myself into an institution that I don't agree with, obviously, then I wouldn't be able to adequately help these kids because I'd hate my job and I wouldn't be happy. And the only reason I'm happy being able to help now is because I can be like Superman and be a vigilante about it, which a lot of people would probably argue against too and say was not a good move. You know, because it's, you're not trained, or you're a dude. There's so many ways that that could be taken. And it sucks. And I didn't realize that when I had offered my help. In learning this lesson, I'm going to think very carefully about wanting to do something like that again. At least before I know if I can follow through. And at first, I told myself that because she was going to be leaving soon, that made it a little bit more acceptable for me to step away. And I still walk her to class every night, every morning. Night, dummy. It's nighttime right now. But, yeah, so that's this week's situation, and I've carried a lot of tension about it. Not trying to get angry at those ladies because they're just doing their job. And even if they're old school, they still do a good job no matter how you look at it, in a way, you know? It's just, I wish I could do more, and I'm going to. I guess the best way to have the biggest impact is to impact a generation down the road to try to think differently about how they raise their kids. That would be the biggest impact. Or to raise my son well enough to make sure that his children carry that ethic and carry that feeling with them too. I think that's the most one. So I'm going to say this Chinese proverb that I heard or read earlier this week. And it's about moving mountains. I forgot. It's from this really lame Chinese parable book that has misspellings galore and missing commas. And you can tell it's a really cheap production. I think I got it for like $4. But it still gives me just little things to think about. And I can read a segment every once in a while. And so it's about this old man who he wants to move a mountain because his brother lives on the other side of that mountain. And he's irritated. He's like, I'm sick of walking around this mountain all the time and not being able to see my brother easier. If this mountain wasn't here, I could just walk straight to my brother's house. And so he comes up with this plan, and he gets his son and his grandchildren, and he starts moving the rock. And his wife comes up. He's like, you're real stupid. Why are you doing this? Why are you, you're never going to move this mountain. You're going to work here every day until you die. And, you know, it keeps going on and on. And eventually, there's another day around the road, and he's getting heckled some more by his brother's wife. And it's just like, he's like, you know what? If I can instill, you see, these children who are helping me move this rock, as long as they keep moving this rock, one day this mountain will be moved, you know? And so the best thing I can do is to make sure that my children keep moving this rock. And I took that to heart real heavy, and I started to see that that is kind of how I see what I want to do. I want to move a mountain of ideology and move a mountain of dogma and try to get people to want to investigate for themselves. I don't want anybody to take what I say at heart. And I always, anything I say on this show or anywhere else in any other format, even in real life, you know, don't take it to heart. I'm wrong. most of the time. You know, I like to be provocative and to be a polemicist and to get people to want to investigate. And if you can prove me wrong and make me change my mind, then that's the best situation. And so when I approach an argument polemically, you know, I only feel that I'm doing a good thing because I'm helping grow that idea or that argument. And if that argument's a real good, virile argument that somebody's giving back to me, I'm only going to help grow it and strengthen it through my questioning. You know, I'm not trying to destroy, I'm trying to create in my efforts. Well, anyways, so I've been reading a lot of Alan Watts, and I wasn't able to get too much into it. I was really wound up for some reason. I don't know why. I think it's because I was on Facebook. I'll get talking to people on social media. I'll start talking to strangers and writing whole books and shit, and it gets real tiring, and you get real into it for like 40 minutes, and then you're just like, "Murr!" And it's like, I gotta get off. And that's why I'm glad I came down here and just started talking, giving my opinion without having to argue online. I just hit a pretty good high marker there, so let's not try to go too hard. Haha. But Alan Watts, he's real cool. You know, I'm reading this chapter, it's on religion, kind of, and how religion and science are connected in a way. Well, they're connected completely because they're both just systems of beliefs. It's the same exact creature, and just because we respect them differently and they hold different places, they still accomplish the exact same task that they did. You know, religion used to be the system that would explain the unexplainable, and this would allow people to feel comfortable because, you know, the ghosts are grandpa that died last year, and all the wicked rainstorms that fuck everybody's lives up and takes every corns out, that's just, you know, God's will. And so there's all these explanations for things, and then science comes along and starts to measure things. It's like, hey, we can predict when this is going to happen because we took a yardstick, and every 3 feet this happens every fucking time, so because we measured it, it's going to happen again. And it did, it worked, and often, a lot, most of the times, it does in fact measure out where we can say, wow, you know, this is really accurate. But the true thing about accuracy is that there's always a percentage of times that it's not going to happen, which is something I say a lot, and you'll hear it again. You know, I'm going to circle around quite a bit if I'm going to be talking to you guys. But it's doesn't depreciate from the fact that we are trying to describe and measure the unknown. And a crucial thing about the unknown is that we don't know what we don't know. And just because we figure some things out, that's not indicative to say we know all of it. And that's why we can never always accurately predict something 100% of the times, even if it's 99.9. And that's where it comes in, and that's kind of what Watts was just depicting. And he was also going into the differences between the East and the West. With Eastern religions or philosophies, I still hesitate. I still think they're misinterpreted by a lot of white people who try to talk about it. Not including myself, of course. But it's... Oh, I hesitate quite a bit. I gotta, maybe if I have better notes or practice, I gotta think about things. So the East focuses more on, he called it psychology. He said it was more of a psychology of religion instead of a religion of theology, which is about God worship. So he thought that the East, which would include, you know, Hindi's Vedanism, don't quote me. That those sort of Hindi ideas, then maybe that's racist too. I need to work on that. But like, it's they're focused on the soul, and the center of who we are, and like my I as an essential focus of what we're doing here, and my actions. Whereas a lot of the Western religions, such as Christianity, they almost have a charismatic leader in the form of Christ or in the form of God, where these individuals are worshipped like an idol. It's idolatry in the form of an anthropomorphized figure, unless you really want to put the effort into looking at what this figure is. Which is why I appreciate Meister Eckhart and, you know, Kabbalic thinkers, and we'll go into that more deeper. And if you listen to me more, maybe I can tell you more about it. My first episode was with a really good friend of mine, Calvin, and we talked about the Kabbal, like Kabbalic, some Kabbalic ideas, because I'm really not that versed on it either. But it's really interesting. It's just a twist. It's a more personalized look at some of these religions, where you depersonalize and anti-anthropomorphize gods into something more personable for me, which makes me almost want to be a Jew. You know, we'll see. But like, I found that distinction very interesting for many reasons, because that's kind of what attracted me to these Eastern religions. And through these Eastern religions, they allowed me to feel more related to these Western religions that have spurned me and made me feel used, or at least the people who use them have used me and made me feel used. I personally don't have anything against any main religions. It's more the institutions themselves and how people use these institutions and abuse them. And Watts does a really good thing about looking at that. All right. Well, I've been going for a bit now. I don't know how long this one is. But I'm losing my train of thought. So I'm just going to do a reading from the Tao, and we'll see if I can get any more ideas out, and then I'm going to call it quits. This is episode number what the fuck ever. I'll figure it out later. I'm sure my book sounds amazing. So I'm gonna read this one just because I'm not very fond of it, and we'll see if maybe I can talk myself out of it. Without going out of doors, one may know all under heaven. Without peering through windows, one may know the way of heaven. The farther one goes, the less one knows. For this reason, the sage knows without journeying, understands without looking, accomplishes without acting. Now that's sort of dangerous. And I think it could be overinterpreted, and that the main message, a lot of these central leaning ideologies, where you look, you're trying to find the middle of extremes, and the middle of extremes is kind of like, you know, if you're too excitable, it's too much, and nobody's going to listen to you. You talk too fast, and it doesn't work. And if you're too, what's the word? I don't want to say base, but boorish. If you're a bore, if you're not very interesting and you're not excitable, then it's just as bad. So the ideal confidence is actually right in between, especially. And not in all situations. Sometimes excitable people and sometimes boorish people have better situations, especially when they're working by themselves. I don't know. Maybe I'm talking shit. But it is interesting. Think about how much you can figure out just through rumination, and that we have an amazing opportunity to go out and gather all these things because we have access to this world. Even if we don't understand this world very well, we can still go out and we can look at things and say, wow, that's really pretty, and that sounds real cool, and I really like the blue color of my room, and I'm glad I have all these things. You know, I'm just whatever, but like, I can do that from inside my room, and I can find this immense peace and happiness with what I've created, and I can take that back out into the world, and it's a circle. You know, you go a cycle or a twister, or you go back out and you take that peace you maintain at home, and you bring it out, and you say, look, I'm really happy at home. I'm really happy doing what I'm doing. You know, I have this peace inside myself. Maybe the out of doors is outside of your body, and it's maintaining the inner world over the outer. Maybe it wasn't even a metaphor for being a hermit and staying inside your house. Maybe it was being a metaphor for what was outside of your vessel, you know, outside of your soul, and doing housekeeping on the inside and having compassion for yourself and having love for yourself. And then being able to take that love out to others and to give it. Because it's impossible to give it if you don't have it on the inside. of your house or your body, your vessel, your soul, your spark, your spirit, whatever you want to call it. I think that's highly apt. I think it's a little bit deeper, and that if you take it at face value and you just say, you know, just stay inside, never listen, never question opinion, you know, I think you would end up just like the boar that I did not want to become. Alright, well, I'm going to cut it. I don't know what I'm doing. I really appreciate everybody who listens to this. If you're listening to this, I want you to know just how valuable you are to me, and that I'm very, very grateful that you exist, that you're here, that you're breathing. I'm so thankful that I have your ears to listen to my really annoying monologues that never end. And I guess it's a lot easier for me not to interrupt you because you're not here. And thank you for that as well, because it's a lot easier for me to monologue by myself. No, I digress. I have a lot more fun with other people, and hopefully the next episode I'll have an interviewee. But thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for being you, and thank you for listening. And nature be with you.